I worked in restaurants for 10 years, putting myself through university and beyond. So I've washed up particularly a lot of dishes in my time. And for sure, I know those moments where, you know, the entire town is at the door, the ovens are sticking and not working, the washing machine's on the fritz. It's like it's going to hell in the handbasket behind the scenes. And here's the thing, that's when your investment in being more coach-like with people in all the quieter times pays off.
This is the Restaurant General Manager Podcast with your host, Scott Stanfield, the GM coach. Today's episode is more of a conversation than it was an interview. It just felt right considering the times. Our guest is none other than Michael Bungay Stanier. Michael's a leading coaching expert, a renowned keynote speaker, with a new TEDx talk that has had over 40,000 views in less than 3 weeks. I'll put a link to that TEDx talk in the show notes. Michael's book, The Coaching Habit, is a Wall Street Journal bestseller, and his follow-up book titled The Advice Trap is, in my opinion, a must-read and implement for all restaurant managers and chefs. The founder of Box of Crayons, a company that strengthens leadership and culture within organizations, he works with clients from all sectors, including Microsoft, Volvo, and the United Nations. He's a Rhodes Scholar and selected by Marshall Goldsmith as the number one thought leader in the coaching world. This was a super fun and outstanding conversation. It's about our current times with COVID-19 and how restaurant managers and chefs can use the insights and questions from The Coaching Habit and how we can avoid stepping in the advice trap. This will allow us to raise our team's ability to exceed expectations. I could go on for days and days about Mr. Stanier. And I want to get to the conversation, but before I do, I want to let you know that the audio in this is a little choppy, and that has to do with all of us being home, and it's putting a strain on the bandwidth of the internet, and especially on Zoom. Without any further ado, let's just get to the episode.
I welcome Michael Bungay Stanier. He's got two major books out there that are impactful for restaurant managers and chefs. And before we get into all of that stuff, I want to, and this is a rare occasion because of where we are in the world today with a global pandemic, I wanted to put a timestamp on it. Today is the 31st of March, 2020. And Michael's from Australia originally, and they just went through the horrific wildfires over there.
Yeah.
And you got all of those things going on. You're in Canada, right?
So that's right.
You don't have to worry about those things.
Yeah.
But we now have this safer at home, stay at home. We have this, you know, President Trump in America here is, you know, put the, you know, the social distancing out to the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
The county I live in is May 1st in Summit County in Utah. And they did that last Friday starting at midnight. So they were already kind of ahead of the game because they said our per capita infection of the coronavirus, COVID-19, was matching some parts of Italy.
That's
and
scary.
So
it is.
So they wanted to really kind of, you know, keep us apart, keep us down. Now the trails are still open. You know, we can still go on hikes and snowshoeing, and we're at 7,000 feet. So it's still snowing here. At least it snowed yesterday. But I just, you know, if you wanted to start with, you know, with these times, what you would recommend for people who, because as we were talking before we started recording, you know, it's a tough time to manage a restaurant right now because most all or 95% of your hourly employees have been furloughed.
Exactly.
If you're still on the clock, you may not be getting full pay and you're working and doing everything from washing dishes to greeting and taking orders.
Right. Right.
So,
you know, it's hard to know what to do or what to say because it is something that we really haven't experienced ever before. And where people are at, they're either, you know, they have too much time on their hands or no time on their hands because they're trying now to do everything. You know, I've talked to other people who've started businesses and, you know, if you're a restaurant manager, you're like an entrepreneur, right? There's your world, there's your team, that's what you're running, you've got your goals. And entrepreneurs everywhere are suddenly going, I've got to figure out what to cut back on. I've got to figure out what I now need to lift. You know, even though I spent years building systems and structures to allow me to focus on management and leadership rather than the doing of it, now I need to get back into the doing of it. And there's one part of you that's going, you know, I probably worked in restaurants going up through the grade. So I've been behind the ovens and I've done the washing up and I've done the this and the other. And you're like, oh, it's a kind of flashback to those days. Part of you is like, okay, there's something there, but there's also just the overall anxiety that you have around how do you manage through this? And there's uncertainty around how long this takes and what the implications are that just make it a destabilizing time. So in terms of what to say, Scott, well, what I don't know, but I'll tell you how I'm trying to think about it as an entrepreneur, somebody who runs a couple of small businesses. One is to understand what you can control and what you can't control. You know, this is all timeless wisdom. And to realize that your best bet is to focus on what's within your control and what's within your influence. You control less than you realize, you influence more than you realize. So understanding that. I personally try and limit the input because what I find is there's not massive amounts of new data coming out, just a lot of noise. And the noise makes me more rather than less worried. So I try and remove, that's one of the things I can control, which is what's the incoming that makes me anxious? How do I reduce that as much as I can? And then as a principle, I keep asking myself, how do I walk the best line I can find between the shadow and the light? Because if you go too far into the shadow, it's hard for you and hard for those around you. You're going to get into that spiral. If you're too far into the light, and there are some people, you know, you hear them and they're like, this is perfect. I get to pivot. I get to reinvent. This is a chance for new opportunities. There's some truth in that, but it's also, if that's all you've got going on, you are tone deaf to how hard it is for other people. So, you know, if you're in the hospitality trade, you have some experience of being a host, of gathering people. And that is a great skill in these times, I think. So there is something about just recognizing that, you know, in this time when we are isolated, I mean, Scott, you're in the middle of self-isolation at the moment because of the travel you've done. I've just come out of my 2 weeks of isolation because I was in the UK before all this kind of really hit. And even though you're physically isolated, there's a way that you can lead the charge to not be socially isolated and be thinking to yourself, how do I do that? And there's 1,000 different ways to do that. But, one invitation for leadership is to be a gatherer and be a host and be a signal of realistic optimism and play that role in the world that you live in.
Yeah, realistic optimism is that balance between what you talked about, dark and light, which is this duality.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, as a restaurant manager, as you're furloughing people, you have to also be kind to them and
right.
But also at the same time, you have this like, wow, I'm got to worry about my own self, my own family, my own exposure,
exactly.
Those types of things, and be brave in the moment and be confident in the moment, mm-hmm. but also cautious in the moment and also kind and caring,
yeah.
And all of those things, because some
right.
people may not be ready to go without pay, you know, for...
No, I mean, most people won't.
This could realistically could go until June, July, you know, with this type of scenario.
Right. I mean, there's, and so part of that, I think, Scott, comes to a place where you understand what self-care means in a situation like this. And as well as, well, how would I put it? I would put it something like this, which is to say, to do your very best and to forgive yourself when it doesn't always go well, because you just don't know. And you can show up and say you're furloughing employees, and you can show up and you can do your very best, and you can still be absolutely a target of anger and sadness and frustration and bitterness. All of that can come your way. And there's a way in which you go, how do I do my very best here? You know, do you choose, how do I find the care I need? Because, you know, I can imagine that there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who go, I'm carrying the burden of a lot of people, right? I've been on the receiving end of frustrated employees, part-time people, customers, franchise owners, a way that you can be, a way that you have a capacity to absorb that and stay grounded and stay generous and stay confident, but also you need to have somewhere you can kind of get the support you need. If all you do is give support, then you burn out and then you get exhausted and depleted. So you need to find the support that you need, ask for it, you know, find other restaurant managers and talk to them and have a place to debrief and a place to complain and a place to be angry and a place to be sad. And there's a big part of this which is like, do the best you can and forgive yourself when it doesn't work, because it will not work plenty of times, because you don't know what you're doing, because none of us know what we're doing.
Right. It's unprecedented. It's uncharted waters.
Yeah.
Taking restaurants that are, you know, 99% of their business is dine in.
Yeah.
And converting them to go and curbside, local delivery, and
right,
you're like, and that restaurant is not, in most part, not the first thought when it comes to, hey, I need a quick lunch, I'm going to get it delivered,
right?
And so it's absolutely, sales are going to suffer, and trying to find creative ways to get the word out and do all those things is, you know, it's hard. It's really hard. I hate to say that, but it is, and it's frustrating, because people are trying harder than they ever have. Even like restaurants are doing grocery service and discounting wines to the same price that they would buy them at a liquor store, and
right,
or wine store, and trying to like just find any way to turn a buck. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Keep cash. So Scott, what are you doing to self-care? I mean, one of the things you do is put a podcast out into the world, which is a gift for sure. But how else are you looking after yourself? How else are you creating, as best you can, community amongst the other people in your position?
Well, I'm trying to lead by example. Right?
Yeah.
One of the things is really, you know, I did two things, two bonus episodes for the podcast. One is how to strengthen your immune system.
Nice. And
one was to eat healthier, basically try to get your body in a more alkaline state, because viruses, bacteria, and cancer can't live long in an alkaline state. They can when you're highly acidic. And
right,
when you see things like, I even have friends, because I used to be a food and beverage director at a hospital, and I have a lifelong friend I've known for 26, maybe 30 years.
Yep.
That's a nurse, right? And so, you know, when you see Krispy Kreme donuts, which is, you know, giving away donuts to nurses on Mondays, I'm actually like responding going, hey, it may not be the right time to have a couple extra donuts on
right,
a Monday, because you're on the front lines, you don't have all the PPE that you need and those type of things.
Right.
The second thing is really get enough sleep, because sleep is an important part of getting your immune system up to where it needs to be.
Yep.
And back to the food piece is actually maybe I was going to talk to you. I've heard in a couple podcasts you talk about wine, but so maybe I was going to ask you about some of your favorite wines, but actually maybe look at not drinking as much during this time, even though you may be stressed out, and that may be your coping mechanism.
Right.
The third one was find a way to mitigate stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you were talking about, talking to other managers and things like that. Some people do get rid of stress by talking about those things.
Right.
I recently, back in December, took a course on transcendental meditation.
Nice.
And it's really been the glue that's kind of held everything together for me. All the you know, esoteric things that I've learned about emotional intelligence and what I was going to describe earlier, you're talking about with like the self-awareness and self-regulation and what I refer to as like getting emotionally hijacked and those type of things. When you meditate, actually comes from the inside out. And it's really kind of like creates a distance between those things that are out of your control and your reaction to it, and you're able to give a more logical response to it.
Yeah, or just a response that is an active response rather than a triggered, I didn't even realize I was responding like this, but here I am somehow. So trying to create that little moment of pause between stimulus and response often invites you to respond in a way that's more the way you want to do it, the more that's kind of aligned to the best version of yourself.
Absolutely. I'm really big into taking care of, you know, ourselves through proper diet, exercise, those type of things. So my son, who's 18, he was doing this push-up challenge. So I joined in with him. So I'm on day three of doing push-ups. And so I have to do 20% of my max every 30 minutes. But our podcast is going to kind of get in the way. So I'm going to make that. And then my max is 43. So I've got to do 12 every 30 minutes today. Yesterday was 26 every 45 minutes. So that's one thing of trying to go out into nature. And like I said, we're in the mountains here. It snowed and we still have 4 foot of snow on the ground. So I did some snowshoeing with my wife yesterday. We did stay 6 feet apart from each other, you know, those things.
Scott, you're really role modeling something lovely to the people listening, which is a wide range of responses. Like there's a physical response, there's an emotional response, there's a family-based response, there's a, you know, finding challenges to do. I love how you're showing to people who are listening into this, which is like you've got to actively build a response to this, or at least you don't have to, you can do anything you want, but you're probably more likely to be more resilient if you're trying out and experimenting a range of different things as a way of managing the stress and anxiety through a time like this.
Yeah. So I was talking to a friend last night and she was talking about how she's just basically been sitting on the couch and then, you know, but she keeps looking over and there's her, you know, her sit up bench over there and she hasn't done anything. And I said, just do 5 an hour, every hour on the hour, just take your phone, set a reminder and just do what you can do that's not painful. Right. And when this is over with, you'll be fitter than you were when you went in.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you've probably heard the old joke about the freshman 15. When people go to college, they gain 15 pounds. I've heard people kind of making a reference that the COVID-19, they're going to come out of this 19 pounds heavier.
Right.
And so when I have free time, my normal default is actually not to eat worse. It actually is to eat a little bit better because I am less stressed. And I understand what I don't have control over, which I don't have control over, you know, what's going on in the world. So I understand what I got control over and when I have limited contact with the outside world, limited contact with my family, you know, those type of things, I tend to go a little bit healthier on the way I eat. I've actually gone a lot healthier when I was actually working in the restaurant and potential exposure and those things. And almost vegetarian in a lot of ways, because I just understand how food affects the alkalinity of the body.
Yeah.
And, but I also need protein. I know that. So I'm eating some.
Yeah.
And, what can I do? I can do some push-ups. I can eat better. I can try to be a bright light to other people in these type of things.
And so part of what I think, and I feel like I'm brainstorming now, and so this may not be useful, but it might be helpful for some people, is to go, what could you do that serves you and serves others? So just based on what Scott's saying, I'm like, what if you reached out to some other folks who are in your field, general managers, and go, right, how about we go, let's do a weight loss group together where we just hold each other accountable for the next 6 weeks. And our goal is to keep our weight the same or lose a couple of pounds or lose 5 pounds or whatever your target might be, but it's an opportunity to come together around something or set up a push-up challenge or a squat challenge or a sit-up challenge or whatever it might be, just like Scott and his son have done. Or potentially just, I mean, one of the things that I'm doing in my community is to host 3 times a week. I host something called Cocktails and Questions. And I reached out to all my, I call them weak ties. So these are people who I know a little bit. They're not my closest friends, but they're people who, you know, I've had some sort of professional interaction with. I know them a bit. I know that they're interesting people. And I limit to about 5 or 6 people per session. It's a bit random as to who shows up. So sometimes 1 or 2 people will know each other. Sometimes they won't. It's like bring your own cocktail. So you get to bring, you know, an actual cocktail or a cup of tea or a glass of water, whatever you want to drink. And I will do a little check-in, just kind of what we've been using a classic, you know, who are you? Where are you based? What are you, one thing you're grateful for at the moment? Then I'll offer up one question and people will have 5 minutes or so just to talk about the question and interact. The question we've been using in March is, what crossroad are you at? So, you know, it's potential for a deep conversation if you want to go there. It's potential for a less deep conversation if you don't want to go there. So that's fine. And then we just check out going, you know, what are you taking away from this? What struck a chord? And, you know, that's my attempt to be a host. And I offer it up just to say there are all sorts of ways that you can be a gatherer. You can create purpose. You can create community. You can be a host. And I think Scott's showing you a bunch of ways to do just that.
Thank you very much. You know, that's amazing what you're doing, connecting people and hosting people. That's something that I don't think that a lot of people have really thought about. I know that we're connecting with family, and I know there's some people who are actually complaining about being stuck at home and those things versus, you know, and just a month ago, they may have been complaining about going to work. So they're going to complain about any other scenario they have, right?
It's one of the contradictions of life. It's like wherever you're at, you're like, I'm feeling a bit trapped by that. But I'll say one thing about this whole idea of weak ties that people might find useful. So there's been research that says that most effective networking happens amongst your weak ties, not the people who know you best, but the people who know you a bit. And just thinking about how this economy may shift over the next little while and going, look, you might be out there looking for a job. Now is a time to be known to more people. And so now, I mean, imagine if you're a host and you're like, I'm reaching out to people on my LinkedIn or whatever platform you might have. You may not know them. You may know them a bit. You host them. So in 6 months' time, when you're like, this is what I'm looking for, this is what help I need right now, they're like, oh, look, I don't know anything myself, but I know you, and I've got 5 other friends who I could ask on your behalf. And there's a way that you can build a resource now that will help create resilience in the time to come.
That really comes from, you know, actually, as part of the subtitle of your book, Advice Trap, that we're definitely in a humbling place in our time right here, you know, where we now can go, wait a minute, it's not the system that was working just stopped.
Yeah.
Right? The cash flow stopped and look what happens.
Right.
So what if we back up and we actually do that, make deeper connections with people who are weak ties and build our network during these times. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I mean, at some point over the next, we probably should talk about a couple of your books, right? You know, and how I use them.
If it's helpful. So you reached out to me and went, look, I know your books and I like it. My wife bought one for me for Christmas, which was lovely. Thank you, Scott's wife. What struck a chord for you about the book? Why does it feel useful for you in your role as a restaurant manager?
Well, there's a couple things with this. One is that, you know, I started noticing after I had read Turn the Ship Around by retired Navy Captain David Martin. And his intent-based leadership, I started noticing that everybody is just looking for somebody to give them an answer. to give them permission to take a step so they won't get in trouble.
Yeah.
And from everybody down, and being a general manager, and even at the time, I've been a director of food and beverage at a hotel and hospital. So I've had a lot of people working for me, and basically they're searching these things out. And I've been working a long time on emotional intelligence. And so to create that space and that pause. And so having a question, especially when I'm sitting down with somebody in a very serious way to start the conversation, get them to talk and actually be able to say, what's on your mind?
Right. Right.
And even though they think I'm getting ready to like lay the wood to them or do all those things, to ask a question, to get them to express themselves, because the number one thing that people want is to be heard.
Yeah.
Right. And if people are in trouble, there's fear, there's stress, or am I getting fired? There's all these things. I'm in the office with the GM and a witness, and now all of a sudden he's asking me what's on my mind.
Right.
It's like it totally flips it the other way.
Yeah.
And then when you get to follow up, I'm big about in my interviews and things like that, asking two questions that combined or like a combination.
Nice.
So I love your, and what else? That's almost like you're throwing a jab and then you got the right hook.
Totally. It's the classic follow through. And people, part of the magic of And What Else, which is one of the seven questions I talk about in the Coaching Habit book, is people don't even really hear it. You hear it as the, because when people start with this, Scott, they're always a bit anxious around, I'm only asking questions and am I adding value and is this really leadership? But what one of the magic pieces around And What Else is that people don't hear you really ask the question. All they hear is you keeping the space open for them to stay engaged, to stay heard, to stay contributing. And it becomes a very empowering act. And you know, one of the people who I love in this world is a guy called Gary Ridge. He is the CEO of WD-40. And we all know WD-40, right? Because every restaurant, every house has a can somewhere. Right. And he's like, hey, look, you know, he's really clear about it. He goes, look, I have a company. It's a huge company. It's like billions of dollars of worth, but I sell cans of oil. That's what he does. But he actually says, I build a culture that happens to sell cans of oil. And it's such a radical approach to leadership that is backed absolutely by amazing results. I mean, really, his company has grown and grown and grown and just been an absolute success. And his commitment that flips the usual thing, which is, look, I am building people, I'm holding them accountable, I'm inviting them forward, I'm inviting them to fulfill their potential, I'm looking for the best of people, has been the thing that's really driven and grown their business results. And I would imagine that if you're, you know, if you own a restaurant, if you run a restaurant, obviously part of your job is to run a great restaurant. But if you flipped it and went, look, I'm running a restaurant so that I can make amazing people, because when I make amazing people, I run an even better restaurant. You know, that is a continuing contribution to a better world.
It is. And that's exactly my mindset when I go into it. I'm doing two things. One is I'm trying to select better people.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that I'm looking for, and I did a, and I haven't released this yet, I did an amazing podcast interview with Bruce Tracy. He's a professor at Cornell University at the Center of Research for Hospitality. And he did a study that was the devil is in the details, the cost of turnover, average cost of turnover for a restaurant employee, hospitality employee with inflation is over $7,000.
Right.
That's one employee.
Yeah.
And then he did another joint a study on which is more important, general mental ability or personality in hiring people.
Yeah.
Specifically, personality conscientiousness is a better indicator of performance 6 months out. General
right.
mental ability is a better indicator of performer in the very beginning of that.
Right.
So I actually have, you know, Simon Sinek asked people who are going to be better right. 6 months out. And help them through the right. first part and get them to the point where they're up on their feet. And then we start really leapfrogging our ability and maximizing the potential of our restaurant.
Yeah.
I look at it as I'm building a culture that delivers the best dining experience ever.
Exactly.
Is really the whole thing that I'm going about and using questions to try to get people to come up with their own answers. I think the biggest thing that would people think that when they go into this mode of asking questions first versus giving the answers, because managers, especially young managers, think that I'm now a manager, I'm supposed to have all the answers.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just supposed to
tell my
team
what leadership looks like. I should tell people what to do, even if I don't know what, if I don't know what the answer is, I should have the answer. So just make something up.
Right.
And it's exhausting and it's wrong and it's annoying. So if you want to lead in a way that's less exhausting, less annoying and less, and more accurate and more efficient, then it's like, and the importance, Scott, to hear for people is to say, part of what I champion in this be led by curiosity is not to never give advice, not to never give direction, because obviously that would be ridiculous. It's just, can you start with curiosity? Can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly? Because it's in that little shift that the magic happens.
Absolutely. You know, you have to give advice sometimes. You have to give direction. You're doing, you're on a 30-minute wait at the front door. The kitchen's back up, is running, 35-minute ticket times.
Yeah.
You know, table 43 wants to talk to you, and you need to go into the liquor room to get a bottle of something, right? And you've got a text from your boss that you need to go check your email.
Right.
You don't have the time to pause and go, what's on your mind?
Right. Right.
Or to say, what do you intend to do from, turn the ship around? You literally just go, what's the question? Here's the answer. Go do this.
Yeah.
But if not every other, but 50% of your time is more, as you would put it, coach-like, right?
Right.
Right.
What that means is
management-like.
Cause I worked in restaurants for 10 years. Putting myself through university and beyond. So I've washed up particularly a lot of dishes in my time. And for sure, I know those moments where, the entire town is at the door, the ovens are sticking and not working, the washing machine's on the fritz. It's like it's going to hell in the handbasket behind the scenes. And here's the thing, that's when your investment in being more coach-like with people in all the quieter times pays off. Because actually you have got people who are figuring stuff out themselves because they have learned and you have offered them the appropriate level of responsibility and they rise to that level of responsibility. So they don't go, it's falling apart and I'm helpless. They go, it's falling apart. I have some agency here. I have some autonomy. I can actually deal with some of the stuff so that when I go and see Scott or my GM and go, here's my problem, it's the real problem.
Absolutely. There's a couple of things in there, and I've heard you quote this, we do not rise to our expectations, we fall to the level of our training.
Yeah, it's in the new book, and I'm not sure whoever said it. I mean, it's attributed roughly to a SEAL, a U.S. SEAL person, which is like, that's why we train.
Right. I saw that it was from a Greek soldier and poet, like in 500 BC or something.
That sounds right.
It sounds right.
Yeah.
Either way, they're both soldiers, right? It's, and so in the heat of the moment, you're right. So what happens is when we're being more coached, like in the downtimes, in the slower times, we're actually training people and raising the expectations, raising their ability. That's in what came to me in the moment, I'm kind of brainstorming here, was in the gray areas in between all the things that we do that's in the training manual.
Right.
Right. Because those are the questions they don't know the answer to that weren't in the book. It's not on the test that have arisen. And now you're giving them more of your mindset way of handling these things, your culture way of handling these things versus what's more binary, what's more black and white and what's in the training manual.
I would guess that's why that research talking about attitude trumping, let's call it mental agility in the medium run plays out, because if you're smart, it doesn't take much to learn some of the processes. You go through the training, you get the hang of it. It's relatively straightforward enough because most processes, particularly in franchise restaurants, are pretty straightforward. You just got to learn them. But if you've got a capacity to go, I'm hungry to learn, I'm hungry to take on accountability, I'm hungry to take responsibility, that's actually where growth happens. I mean, the CEO of Boxer Crayons, the training company I started, she, I hired her from behind the bar of my local restaurant because she was so impressive behind the bar, and she started off doing a little bit of marketing work for me. And then in 4 years, she's gone from that to now running the company. And she attributes a lot of how she shows up. I mean, she's brilliant, but she is also smart and takes accountability and just leads in a beautiful way. And she attributes a good deal of that to what she learns from her role, her time in the hospitality service industry. And we've talked about, you know, that whole piece around, you know, times we're going, we should only hire people who've done time being a waiter or working behind the scenes, because the very best people learn a lot there.
They do, for sure. I actually have said for a long time is that when we graduate high school, we should have two choices. One is to go into the military, or the other one is to go work in hospitality for the next 4 years. Then you can go do whatever you want to, right, at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just me making a joke, but there's so many skills that have been learned. I even heard Brené Brown say that she learned more about empathy working as a bartender than she ever did from any class that she took.
Right, right. Exactly right.
Yep. And we're getting short on time. We have about 5 minutes left. And sure. I wrote all these things down. I haven't even asked you any of these questions, right?
Exactly. But we had a good conversation, right? Yeah. I mean, it felt like we talked about some of the important stuff about what it means to be in this time right now.
I think that's important, you know, and I really love both of your books and what you're talking about. I know that I have stepped in the advice trap many, many times.
As have we all, Scott, as have we all.
as we all have. And, you know, and we actually can get so much further with just avoiding that trap, you know, just standing still and asking questions and asking, you know, better questions, and you get better answers.
Right. Sure. And the advice trap for the folks, you know, people who haven't read the book, is just to hear it again. It's not advice. Advice is fine. Advice has its place. What kills you is when advice giving is your default response to every situation. No matter what anybody's talking to you about, you think you have to have the answer to it. That's the trap. That's what you're looking to kind of dodge and to slow down the rush to action and advice giving.
I couldn't agree with you more, because we, in an effort to try to give all the answers, we actually come across in some ways probably as a know-it-all sometimes, or yes, you know, or screw things up, you know. And what I love about this approach is that as long as you remember that we still have veto power on what the final decision is, right? Yes. On what it is, right? It allows us to, you know, have more flexibility. It allows us to learn from other people how they may have solved the problem, or somebody else they worked for solved the particular problem in a way. In a lot of ways, we're learning from younger generations about different things too, that may, you know, there's a book that's called Rookie Smarts, right?
Yeah, exactly. Liz Wiseman. She's a friend of mine, and another fantastic book. Her other fantastic book is called Multipliers, which is how great leaders allow the people that they lead to multiply their strength. You know, they have a kind of a positive effect and affect in the work that they do. Liz's stuff is really great.
It is. I remember when I heard her talk at the Global Leadership Summit about that, of Rookie Smarts. I went back to work that particular night, and somebody that had not worked in the restaurant business much wanted to give me some ideas. And I said, absolutely. I'd love to hear everything you have. Where before I would have said, I'm the GM. I've got all the answers. I've been doing this 20 plus years at the time, and those things. And opened my eyes to listen.
If you allow the space for somebody to come up with their own ideas, you've got a couple of things that will happen. One is they're going to come up with better ideas than you had. And you're like, that's awesome. It's kind of amazing, but it's awesome. Fantastic. Get out and do it. Second is they're going to come up with worse ideas. Well, actually, no, there are three outcomes. The second is they're going to come up with an idea that is good enough, even if it's not quite as good as the idea you have. And then you're in that interesting crossroads to go, you know what? might have a different way of doing this, but by letting them do their thing, which will work, I empower them, I encourage them, I recognize them, and who knows, their idea may even still be better than my idea. Or they come up with some ludicrous, mad idea that you know will never work because you did it yourself 25 years ago and it's nuts. In which case you go, look, I celebrate the fact that you thought that might work. Let's play it out and see if we did that, what might happen. And you get to use that as a teaching moment. And you get, just as you said, you have kind of overall veto on this. So nobody's going to drive the car off the cliff. You just get to go either any, no matter what you come up with, there's an opportunity where I empower you, I teach you, and I encourage you. And that inevitably means you have more people taking on more responsibility, being more accountable, which actually means that you get to work a little less hard because you got better people doing the right amount of work that you lead.
Absolutely. We're getting short on time, and I want to have respect for that. I can't thank you enough, Michael, for coming on. It's been amazing.
Scott, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for letting me come on, relive and remember some of my own days in a restaurant, and to serve as best I can this important population.
You've been listening to the Restaurant General Manager Podcast. I hope you visit again soon. Please like, comment, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. You can find me, Scott Stanfield, on LinkedIn or at my website, thegmcoach.com. Please stay tuned each week for new episodes of the Restaurant General Manager Podcast. Thanks for listening.